SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From Pimlico Racecourse, Sirius 219. Desultry? Does that work?
That works.
Desultry. How about Dank? Does Dank?
Dank, I understand.
Dank was Desultry. A very good horse.
Desultry was a new word to you?
Yeah, I might have to go for the dictionary.
Yeah. Is that a word? Desultory?
Desultory, sure.
Desultory? Okay, maybe we can work that into our program today.
Absolutely.
Desultory.
I'm going to find a way to
we'll
say
open
on
with
desultory
it's
afternoon.
Desultory afternoon here at Pimlico.
Well, in the meantime, at least it's not deeming down rain for now. And I think if it stays like this for the next 36 hours, it would be okay.
We could deal with this.
I think the only problem, and a lot of the trainers have alluded to this, even Bob said, he doesn't want to run on a drying out track. It's not like he's not going to run. Don't get me wrong or anything. And as a rider, I would much rather have a sloppy track than a drying out track any day of the week.
Yeah, we were talking about this yesterday. Yeah. And it's just, you know, when it gets that drying out stage, it gets heavier. It doesn't get as consistent. At least if it keeps raining and it's sloppy, you still have somewhat of a seal on it and it'll be uniform.
Don't get me wrong. We don't want to paddle around in the rain all day today and all day tomorrow. I mean, it would be nice if it stopped, but I don't think the track is going to get much of a chance to even dry out if it does.
But you could trot out your leather gear.
Yes, actually, I've brought some leather gear with me. Thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But if you get wet, does it constrict then? Like
a little tighter? I think this is for a different show.
Yeah. I could host that. If you haven't recognized the voices that are with us, Zoe Cadman and Rich Migliori from
went downhill fast.
Doesn't take long on this show. This show. We have the there's no ring bits. There's no figure eights.
Might need a run out blinker.
We watched this morning. Rich and of course Zoe and the entire team from ExpressBet TV, xbtv.com. Watch XBTV on Twitter. This is your show. You come to a Stronach Group facility, and it's your turn to really cover wall to wall, and that includes back home in California, where Aaron and Joel and Millie and from every corner the team is diving in. Johnny D and Eddie Olchik and everybody for the ExpressBet Preakness Wagering Guide. I mean, this is as difficult as it can be at this facility. It's always kind of a party, even with this weather, and everybody's upbeat, and it's always special coming here.
Well, I mean, we've called it for years, the Derby is the prep for the Preakness. And it's a lot of people's favorite leg of the Triple Crown. Even Bob Baffert said it's his favorite, just purely because of the way you're treated here when you come to the Preakness. It really is first class.
It really is. It's a lot of fun. It's a great atmosphere. And there's so much pride in Maryland racing. And you know, the people that have supported it for years. And then the Stronach Group just puts on a great show. I mean, we've had a great time, even though we've been here about 5 o'clock every morning.
Yeah, it's been fun. It really is. It is the jewel in the Triple Crown. And that is for sure. Folks in Maryland, they love racing. And I think you hit it on the head, Richie. They're very proud. And they're proud of their product. And yes, we're at Pimlico. And it's a very old facility. But I'll tell you what, the Wi-Fi is working really well now.
They put a million and change into boosting
really
it. So, yeah, it should. And I have to get the requisite opportunity when you have riders. And we talk about the big races, and Rich, I don't know if you were going to get to War Emblem that day, but your best finish in a Triple Crown race came right here for the late Nancy Albert and Magic Wisner.
Magic Wisner. Wouldn't you rather talk about the Black Eyed Susan? I won. No.
it is Black Eyed Susan Day.
Magic Wisner, he just ran his guts out. And I blame and I've told them this, I blame Mike Smith for costing me that Preakness, because I was rolling on the outside, and I felt like I am going to nail War Emblem right on the post. And I was gaining, and Mike went right next to him with Proud Citizen and made him kind of go on a little bit. And you know, because he fought, and War Emblem was a horse that would find if he was challenged. If he'd have stayed away from him, I'm convinced I would have nailed him. And I was like, Mike, why did you have to go next to him? Why?
Well, and you know, one of the – you know, one of the things you talk about Maryland racing, and one of the real special aspects of this race is local participants that make it here. And, of course, Deputed Testimony, the most notable in terms of winners, but Oliver's Twist came up with Haskin yesterday between the Timber Country and Thunder Gulch in 95. There, you know, there's a special portion going back to Shaladin, and I say this with every live conversation when you're sitting here, and you were here with Millie and Mike Canale last year. I get to do the show for the week from this room with all the photos, and I send out, you know, tons of historic tidbits, and you just get imbued with, you know, with the spirit and the history here. And we've talked plenty this week about, you know, what the long term prospects are for the facility and the race. I mean, the race will go on if it's at Laurel. In fact, there was a big piece in USA Today that got tremendous play, which yesterday about you know, if it went to Laurel, it wouldn't be the worst thing ever to happen, but it would be.
I mean, it's, you have to face the facts that it's going to happen eventually.
Yeah. Yeah, I would think
unless the state and the city decide that it's worth redeveloping and building a new facility here, but they're going to have to chip in, you know, the vast majority of the money, and it's a question. Yeah, I mean, it's a question of whether you want the hospital to come up the hill and take over the property and use that as your redevelopment engine, or whether the history is that important. And let's remember, this race wasn't here for a long time. It was in New York, and then it came back to Maryland.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to bring that up. I mean, it has been run at other venues, even outside the state. It's been run at different distances. It's been run before the Derby at times. So, listen, we're going back, you know, yeah, when you and I were kids, Steve. But
thank you.
I figured I'd beat you to the punch.
Thank you.
But you know, I respect and love the history of the game, and of course, there's a feeling like, well, it belongs here, but the game does consistently change and evolve.
And I think you have to. I mean, horse racing, that's one thing that's detrimental to horse racing is horsemen are resistant to change.
Sure.
And we see it time and time again. We shoot ourselves in the feet. It's amazing we still have feet, because that is
what we do
time and time again. You have to evolve. Like, you really do. You've got to step up to the plate.
Before we start talking about the horses involved and tomorrow, I will mention, Rich, that today, being May 18th, it happens to be May 18th, 2002, was the race, War Emblem and you,
okay,
on Magic Wiesner on
don't make him cry all over again.
No.
But you won the Black Eyed Susan the day before.
Yeah. No, it was the year before.
The year before.
But I got a big kick out of winning the Black Eyed Susan. Beyond the obvious, it's a really prestigious race. Everybody's eyes are on Pimlico these 2 days. But the first time I ever came to Pimlico, I was 15 years old, galloping a filly named Island Charm for Steve Damaro. And Stevie Jr. drove the van down. I rode in the van with the horse. And, you know, you're a kid, so you're excited to be at Pimlico, the home of the Preakness, and wandered around here. It was in the steak barn with Codex and Genuine Risk. Mm. And so we ran third or fourth, and Weber City Miss won the race, if I'm not mistaken.
Now a prep for the Black Eyed Susan.
Right. And then 21 years later, I won the Black Eyed Susan for Steve Damaro Jr. You know, so it was like a really full circle kind of thing. And I love Maryland racing. I really love the way people in Maryland embrace racing.
They love it.
Yep.
And, I mean, you can just – people on the apron, and I think the Sunrise Horse Tours are fantastic.
That's great, a bunch of little kids.
Oh, I got pictures. I'm going to put the pictures up, actually.
Absolutely fantastic. And even on Thursday morning when it's just teeming down rain, there's like 30, 40 people on the apron, and the girls that are doing the tour, it's like, this is double the amount of people that we've had here. And the fact that people are coming out shows the love of horse racing in Maryland. It really does.
Absolutely.
Two-item limit.
Two-item limit, yeah.
The winner in 2001 of the Black Eyed Susan. And let's talk a few minutes. We just a half hour ago watched as Justify went out for Baffert, and obviously under the conditions with this track, nobody's doing a whole lot out there. Just easy, you know, easy gallops around. The horse that has had the most experience, frankly, over the various kinds of mud we've had is Good Magic. He was out the first day in the peanut butter, and then, you know, the last couple of days with the sealed slop. So he has seen a couple of different. You're smiling.
I just felt so bad for him yesterday because when Justify went at 8:30, it was like the racing god said, "Oh, whoa, yeah. hold on, we're not going to get the Derby winner wet." But when poor Good Magic went out. It was like there were dogs and cats falling from the sky. It was just pissing down. And he got water in his ear galloping down the lane the second time. He's shaking his little head. And he looked really good. Like, second time around is when you really want to see him, because once he's striding out, he gets over the ground really well. But I just had to feel bad for him yesterday.
Yeah, he actually went out, and that's when the skies opened up.
They opened up, and it just wasn't fun. I did feel for him, especially because Bob opted to go later, and we're like, no, it's still going to be rain. Bob's crazy. He should have gone earlier. Here it stops. We were expecting a little rainbow and a leprechaun with a pot of gold to come trotting along and just hand it over to Bob.
Well, I tell you what, Justify, you know, any fears or worries about what he looked like the day after the Derby with his hind foot, and, you know, he looked pretty tender. They're gone squashed. Now. Watching him gallop, I mean, I was looking for something to say, well, is he vulnerable? And I didn't see it.
No. It's not there.
And physically, weight-wise, and
he's a bull.
Yeah.
He's an absolute bull.
Yeah, he's carrying as good a weight now as he did going into the Derby. And honestly, I'm surprised all the horses that ran in the Derby actually all look really good.
Lone Sailor was really surprising because he ran well in the Derby, and he looked fantastic out there, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, really good.
Yeah.
Now, how can you can't tell bushy tail because they got the tails all wrapped up.
No, his was out.
His was out. Yeah, that's a pain though, right? The mud.
Maurice has got that
on top.
Yeah, Maurice is on top of that.
Well, you know, they pick up, like, particularly for racing, they pick up a lot of weight with their tail if they're not tied up. You know, on a sloppy track
sure.
like this, I mean, they can pick up 8-10 pounds of mud.
When you weigh out, that's a funny, you know, you both in the
weigh
days
the tail.
in the days when you would weigh out after a muddy, sloppy day. How much added the water and the mud?
Easily 4 to 6 pounds you could pick up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a wet chamois.
Yeah.
That's funny. That's
and the carcass scales, they kind of factor that in too. Like, so if you come back, let's say the horses carry 126, you come back at 131.
They know.
You picked it up.
It's a good way for overweight guys to slip in.
I knew every trick in the book.
Pretty good. Let's lay out how this field came together. And we, you know, there's been so much talked about, you know, obviously keying in on Justify and Good Magic, even both of Wayne Lucas's horses. But let's touch on the horses that are a little lesser known. And last night we had our Stats Racelens seminar, and we got through the Preakness. We did a 40-minute session, and Tenfold's name didn't come up at all. And I was a little surprised. And he has the profile of the kind of horse that hits the board in this race and boosts the payouts. And I think he's a horse that's been sort of, you know, bubbling beneath the surface all winter and spring.
When he broke his maiden at Oaklawn Park, he was absolutely sensational. Now, he came back in a allowance race. He did everything right, but I thought maybe he took a little bit of a step back. For me, I was expecting something similar, something of the same kind of thing that we saw when he dazzled breaking his maiden.
Yeah, his second start was workmanlike, and he got it done. And it's funny because we talked about Justify and the way he looked on the racetrack yesterday. You know, he was the star of the morning. But Tenfold, to me, was the second best physical appearance on the track yesterday morning. And he's kind of a smaller, more compact horse, but with a great balance to him that you think will handle whatever kind of surface we're going to have tomorrow. He is a very live long shot.
And it was really interesting talking off camera to Steve Asmussen before the Arkansas Derby, because I simply said to him, I'm like, how did you come up with Victor Espinosa to ride this horse in the Arkansas Derby? And he was like, well, that's a good question. He goes, I don't want anyone to think too much. He goes, Victor's the type of guy that'll just get on and ride.
Yeah, just let him run.
Just go. And that didn't happen. It just didn't happen. So I think he's going to be closer and it's going to help him.
Yeah, and I think that's what they want. They want him – he has such efficient mechanics in his stride. They want him to use that stride. And wherever that places him, don't inhibit what comes easy to him. And I think you'll see him much closer tomorrow.
By Curlin and out of a Tappet mare, and as you say, is one of these clip-along types, kind of screams Belmont to some degree, looking ahead. But I was out there this morning. I made my annual visit to the grave of Pimlico Barney, which is one of my favorite little things. I'll put the picture up. I mentioned yesterday, I always go say, pay my respects. You know the Pimlico Barney story?
I don't. No.
Well, you know, right there at the Stakes Barn.
Okay.
The corner where the parking lot, that media parking lot is there, yeah. at the corner of the fence.
Right.
The
Who's Barney?
Pimlico Barney was a dog that came onto the racetrack. They don't know how, if he wandered onto the racetrack. Some say that a night watchman had him. The night watchman ultimately adopted him.
Okay.
But Pimlico Barney came on the racetrack and would make the rounds with the night watchman on the fire brigade.
Wow.
And ultimately, after not too many, you know, too many years or sessions, he could sniff out hot pots and electrical circuits that were, you know, became just and would make the rounds himself.
Wow.
Would go barn to barn.
That's pretty cool. I like this story.
It's the greatest. Pimlico Barney, and he's buried in the corner there behind the Stakes Barn. And they put up that hospitality tent. And so a lot of times it's obscured. But I've been coming here.
I'm going to look for it now, tomorrow. I'm definitely going to pay my respects.
Go peek around. Go, you know, go to the end of the hospitality tent.
Yeah.
Open up you can open up to go on the backside of the tent. And of course, you know, the patch of grass there, you know, that long patch of grass, which is the most famous grazing area in racing, where virtually every great horse for 100 years has grazed on that patch.
And it's lush grass, and we saw something yesterday, Zoe.
So you want to know what kind of a trainer Rudy Brissett is. So he's there, and I think it's his girlfriend.
Yeah,
his
fiance. I believe it is, yeah.
So she's out there. We're about to do our hit, and we look behind. She's down on her hands and knees, and she's got the feed tub, Quip's feed tub, and she has a pair of scissors, and she's cutting the grass for Quip, and she fills up the feed tub with grass and then carries it in for Quip. I thought that was fantastic.
I mean, like, you know, that's like peeling the banana for him, or just, I mean, you know,
he didn't have to get wet.
No.
Going out
no.
to pick his own, have someone else pick his grass.
We got
for
a big
him.
Kick out of that. We thought that was tremendous.
Well, there's pictures, and I'll circulate a few. There's pictures of countless greats. I've got a wonderful picture of Tim Tam. Nibbling there.
Wow. Justify wasn't eating any grass.
No.
No.
No, they didn't have
that's
him out there.
That's not the Baffert ammo.
That's, no, huh?
No.
No.
No alfalfa, little, no flicks.
I'm sure he gets something.
Yeah, but
they
just don't bring him out to graze.
I think Bob is, what if there's something in the grass? What if someone drops something? Like, there's so many things that can go wrong. Yeah. And so you're not going to see him grazing.
Sure.
At least not now.
You mentioned Rudolph Brissett. Let's talk about Quip and drawing the inside and his presence in this race. And what do you expect Florent Giroux to do when the gates open?
He's got to go. I think it's a perfect post for him because it's going to help Justify. They're the same ownership. So they'll send him forward as he can go. And, hey, if he's good enough to hang on there, he will. And if he's not, he's not. It's as simple as that.
And I think Justify just sets up stalking.
Justify doesn't need the lead.
Well, there's at least two other horses that between the seven and the rail, and this has come up already, obviously, since the draw on Wednesday, and you've got Diamond King, who, you know, is a natural gate horse and seems to break and come running, and Castellano, who, you know, is a handful, you know, when it comes to, you know, to figuring out a way to utilize his horse,
yeah, he'll
his
forward.
Mount. He'll be forward, right? What do you expect Jose Ortiz to do with Good Magic? Does he want to get in between the speed horses and Justify, float him wide?
I think Justify is going to be four wide. If he's not on the lead, he's going to be wide, because Mike's going to ride him like the best horse. He's going to send, and
I think he'll park him out there three, four wide. I don't think it'll matter.
He's just ran a mile and a quarter. Distance is not the problem. So if he has to run a mile and a quarter in a mile and a 3/16 race, he will if he has to.
It'll be interesting to see how the track's playing, too. I'm sure that'll determine some of the strategy, too, because if let's say the rail's no good because of the amount of rain we've had.
Which is not unusual here. This gets very heavy down inside.
You know, and that's something that obviously the jockeys pay attention to. People that are wagering need to pay attention to it, because you might adjust how you think a race is going to be approached. Justify is very naturally fast. Mike's not a rider that gets in horses' ways. Oh. He won't be looking to rate, but he won't be sending him. He'll let him get in his natural stride. That's Mike's style. I think Quip being inside, though, it does almost simplify things
that he really has to
go forward.
Right.
And reading quotes from Jose Ortiz, he feels like he has to be on Justify. He says he wants to shadow him. He wants to be, don't give him too much of a lead. Like he took that run at him in the Derby.
He doesn't want to play
catch up. And I think that's a mistake.
I agree. The minute, and looking back at the Derby, had Good Magic had the chance to get out ahead,
wouldn't have been second.
Well, maybe not, but I guess it depends on the way in which you want to approach the race. I mean, to win or to get your best finish.
I think you have to play your game, and if things go crazy and they speed up or he doesn't, you know, it's not his day. I think if you play into his strength, right, you're compromising yourself. That's what I think.
We know he's quick, and he's going to have a target on his back. Everyone's going to be watching him. No one is going to let him get 3-4 in front. That's just going to be chasing him the whole way, and it could be detrimental. Like, it could set up for a horse that's going to come flying like Lone Sailor.
Well, he is the lone stone closer that can sit back, and certainly has got the right guy in Arad Ortiz in terms of coming with a run.
Well, we were having this conversation too. Both Ortiz brothers are so phenomenally talented. Jose's a little bit more versatile.
Yes.
Where Irad, he can do it all as well, but he's more comfortable coming from off the
pace. Yes, very much so. Let's fold in both of Lucas's horses, and it's a love fest this week between Baffert and Lucas. You know, when frankly, 10 years ago, they would have. There was a risk that they'd kill each other if the opportunity arose. It's amazing how, you know, getting older and mellower.
We all mellow, don't we?
Not you.
Oh.
No, that's the scary thing. I actually have mellow.
There you go. What about the two Lucases? You got Sporting Chance, who was not given a chance to run in the Derby by his own hijinks.
Yeah. And, you know, he's a difficult horse to train. Both Wayne's horses are going to be fresh because they've really done nothing for the past week coming in. Sporting Chance, it was reported he refused to work at Churchill Downs. I asked Wayne about it. He said he just called an audible that day. But all he's
the horse called the audible.
Yeah. All he's really done is gone the wrong way with the pony. It's not really the best way you would want to see him coming in. Wayne also said he pulled shoe off that day. He just walked the shed row yesterday morning as well. Provazo's looked great galloping the wrong way. Yeah. He's gone easy on as an absolute plan. That's Wayne's plan, to have him fresh coming in, and he's going to be a very fresh horse.
Yeah, I actually, out of the two, I prefer Provazo. I don't like the antics with Sporting Chance, and I think it's kind of a shame. Sporting Chance,
got
very,
talent.
Very talented horse, and I really think being overridden, particularly in the hopeful, kind of made him a little bit sour to things. You know, and he reacted so negatively to getting hit left-handed that day, and he bolted near the wire, almost cost himself the race. And basically, let it be known. I don't want to be abused like that. And then it happened again in the bluegrass. So, you know, Luis Saez really got into him hard. And I just don't think he's as thrilled with everything. If you ride him, I think you want to get along with him. You don't want to demand from him.
Yeah, you can't ask anything of him. Physically, he looks great, though. Yeah, I mean, if anyone has any knocks with him, he's an extremely sound horse. He's just quirky, and Wayne will say he's quirky. He's by Tiz now.
Mm-hmm. He certainly, in that Pat Day Mile, is the obscured participant who was in the midst of getting involved and was moving as every bit as good as Funny Duck, and yeah, very well could have won that race if he didn't have to check up as he did. So he'll be obviously the longer price. I don't see the problem. The problem with both of these horses, I'm trying to figure out a trip that either one gets that makes them a winner.
Well, yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I don't see it either, particularly with Sporting Chance. But, you know, they got to run the races. I mean, long shots have won.
They have to
before.
Run the race, that is for sure.
Let me get a final, you know, final. I'm going to ask about some other anything else before we wrap. I got about 2-3 minutes. But, you know, final projection as to the gates open and what happens, Zoe? Start to finish.
I think everyone's sending out of the gate, to be perfectly honest. I think Quip goes forward. He's going to be chased by several others, and Justify is going to be 3 or 4 wide going into the first term with Mike Smith.
And
I think Justify wins.
You think he's rateable, and you're not worried about a track that you know, being put in that position?
No, I'm not. He could run over rocks as far as I care.
Yeah, I don't see a lot of chinks in his armor. I just think he's the best of this group. And you know, now there wasn't a huge separation between him and Good Magic, but I just hope that they use Good Magic judiciously. Yeah, I don't think you want to make too much use of him early. I think you want to let him get in a rhythm. If he gets the Bluegrass trip, you know, or the Breeders' Cup trip kind of in behind that first flight of horses and takes his time, I think that gives him his best chance. And I'm going to use Tenfold as my long shot. I'd like the horse. I just like him as a physical specimen, and I think he'll handle any ground.
Any thoughts, anything you've seen, some of the other races? And it's so difficult. It's going to be a very strange for us, a strange weekend preview, because there's just not a certainty as to what we're dealing with. I mean, the turf, frankly, when we went across for the draw, that turf was firm. That was Wednesday.
Yeah.
But it really, we've gotten so much more water.
I know, but it's 8 inches.
It is big, lush grass.
The grass is thick as can be.
Yeah, they've taken some of the races off the turf today, 2, 6, and 8, I do believe. As far as the races today, I think you have to take a good look in race 10, the Jim McKay, a really good look at Hodgie, because he's proven over a wet turf course. I love him in there. He's actually the 2-1 favorite. So Hodgie, the Black-Eyed Susan's going to be a great race. We saw Coach Rock. She looks like she's rebounded off a dull effort very well for Dale
Romans.
She's
grown considerably since Florida. I think she's a bigger, stronger filly than I saw when she won the Oaks down there, Gulfstream Park Oaks. Poor effort in the Kentucky Oaks, but I think she can rebound.
Good One Honey is 5-1 in the morning line. Now, she's a local filly. I think she's going to take to a wet track. She's done an awful lot in a short amount of time. First time going long, first time in a stake. She's basically passed every test for a young trainer by the name of Jason Egan that perhaps many people outside of Maryland haven't heard of. He's a very, very sharp trainer, and I think Good One Honey's going to be a little bit of a price in there.
Yeah, and she's very, very talented. I like the 9 a little bit in there, Sarah Street. She's got a pedigree that I think, you know, screams wet track, and I think she's improved with every start. I think I give her a good look in there as well.
Looking towards tomorrow with some of the Chad Brown entrants in there, I think Long Haul Bay has looked phenomenal training over any kind of surface here at Pimlico all week long.
Yeah, he's been a standout, and he should be very tough.
And he's got the outside stalking, the Marty McGee outside open air where the air is clear stalking trip. I thought that Lewis Field had a look in the Maryland Sprint. Certainly the Gallarette and the Dixie will stay on the grass.
Alicia's World has looked really good training for Chad.
And it's funny, it seems like she's broken the schneid about being a bridesmaid with that win, and maybe, you know, that opens the floodgates a little bit. And, you know, beyond her, I thought the first time the North American newcomer, that blessed silence of Christophe. What might she have?
Well, again, we talk about ground. You know, somebody that you would think would
benefit. The only problem with a lot of the European horses coming over to the States is they're looking for firm ground.
Yeah.
That's one of the things.
Point does not get made nearly enough.
You need
enough.
To look back in their past performances and see how they've handled good ground. Not so much soft ground, because soft ground over there is knee deep. But you need to really look into that, because that's the number one reason a lot of these fillies come over, is because they're looking for some firmer ground.
Steve, who do you like in the Pimlico Special today?
I struggled with this. I was all over the place. I ultimately just came back to Corrales and Andy Stronach with Something Awesome. And we know the Awesome Agains with the wet track, and this is a horse that's versatile, whether it was the Bullring or even before that. People shouldn't think that the win at Charlestown was something unique to the facility there. He's a serious horse.
That's who I like. We were on site for the General George, and that track was as sloppy could be, and he relished it, rallied from far off the pace that day into fast fractions, and he's proved very adaptable to going longer. I think the ground really helps him as well. I like him.
I like Hedge Fund. And I think Irish War Cry, you've got to take a good look at him drawn down on the rail as well.
I'm struggling. He's one of my favorites, and Mrs. De Tomaso, who we just absolutely cherish and think the world of. I thought Rated R Superstar is the horse you want coming late, and there is plenty of front-end interested parties, and he's the type that is going to pick up a share at 8, 9, 10 to 1. I want to ask you both about two divergent circumstances regarding the major players in the Dixie. I don't know what Buff Bradley did wrong with the Visadero to have him boosted out from under, but he's in the barn of Kelly Rubley, and certainly has got a big shot in the Dixie. You got the defending winner, World Approval, who, in retrospect, now that Hillsboro, which at the time looked like, oh, he's coming back off the layoff and he had to work a little bit, then the absolute egg lay in the kill row, where he was dreadful. I mean, there's no denying it. And what do you do with him tomorrow?
Give me some Frostmourne.
Yeah.
And then Shug's horse drawn on the rail. Fire Away and Frostmourne for me.
Two of them trained sensationally. We actually did bullet drills about them. And
go to wexbytv.com and take a look at their works.
Yeah,
fantastic.
Two of them are really coming into this in good order.
Well, so there's alternatives, and that's what we want in here, and we won't worry. I don't know what's going to happen to that Sir Barton. It's such a kind of a strange layout of the way the things. I don't know what George Ann Hale and Sal Sinatra, they were obviously concerned about scratches and about the turf and about where do we put the races, and I guess I can't imagine NBC is showing the Sir Barton.
I don't know.
It's a weird.
They want people here from start to finish, which is a good plan.
Right.
And I think that's how they've set the races out, along with, the big $2 million guarantee for the pick five and the pick fours, and they've set them out very well in order to garner the best wages.
Yeah.
We're gonna wrap and let you guys get off to your activities. What's the broadcast plan today?
All day long.
All day.
Go to Express Bet.
Starting.
Sign in.
Starting at 11:30.
Race one. We'll be up at 11, I think.
Yeah, we'll be up at 11, and we'll be all the way through the last race.
Outstanding. And then interaction. How about Jeff and Aaron and Millie input and.
Well, they're just waking up now. I don't think Siegel's seen anything before 7 o'clock since 1962. So, Siegel, it's 6:30 there.
Yeah.
He'll have done all his work. He'll be brushing his hair.
We'll get a couple of long shots from Aaron.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, that's definitely a guarantee.
I think he likes Lone Sailor. It's his best bet.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, there were plenty of smart people at Kentucky that liked him, including Paul Matisse and Duke. Paul, by the way, Paul's got family. He's got a family function up in the Berkshires.
So he can't be here.
No, not even here. He can't even be involved, really.
Anywhere near the old Great Barrington Fair?
It might be. Did you ride? Did you ever ride?
I never rode there. We ran a horse there once, and I went there as a kid. But I was in the town last Sunday, Mother's Day. this Guido's Market right across from Great Bankton.
Oh, and you fit right
dinner.
In.
Yeah, I was cooking dinner for Mother's Day, so that's the best Italian market you can go to, and I went and did my shopping.
That's too funny. Did you ever see the little fair circuit?
No.
And I can't think of an equivalent in Illinois or in the places you rode.
No. No fairs.
Not so much.
Nope.
How about back in the Australasia days?
England, maybe?
England? Or England? When you...
Points? Yeah. Points would be similar
okay.
to the
not a half mile oval, though.
Yeah. No, like it, 50 it, acre field.
Countryside, exactly.
Yeah. Green grass and ponies.
Crab cake, any pushes? Any of your favorites down here?
The Mount Washington Tavern.
Oh, it's always great.
We ate lunch there yesterday, and that was fantastic.
That's always good. Out to Ellicott City, an option as well, and just so much fun, always.
Always.
Good to talk with you.
Zoe Cadman, Rich Migliori, XPTV. Let's take a break here. Don Johnson is going to join us in a little bit here. He's in a meeting, but we're going to talk to Don Johnson. Of course, the remarkable story. He basically broke Atlantic City, $15 million in a week, wiping out Borgata and the Tropicana and Caesars, and very big part of the computer-assisted wagering concept in the U.S., and we should have a fun conversation with Don. Later, Jay Pribman, top of hour two. Nick Tamaro, of course, and we'll talk to Vance Hansen, who's here from Briz, and we'll check in with the boys in Kentucky as well, with James Scully and Ed DeRosa, Hammer, and much, much more. Some local Mid-Atlantic stuff from Nick Hahn and Frank Vespi. It is Weekend Preview, Preakness Weekend Preview from Old Hilltop at the Races, SiriusXM, back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on SiriusXM Radio.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
He's got a long way to go to come and get Army Mule, who's pulling away by five.
2 years ago, Pennsylvania bred Army Mule was purchased at the Fasig Tipton Mid-Atlantic sale at Timonium. Now he's a grade one winner.
Army Mule, ultra impressive in the Cartery flew home.
There'll be more than 30 Pennsylvania breds at the Fasig Tipton two-year-olds in training sale, May 21st and 22nd at Timonium, Maryland. Breeding and racing in Pennsylvania, it's a winner.
While being on the cutting edge of scientific and nutritional research, Biomedical Research Labs has developed the number one selling equine blood builder in the world, the most advanced muscle builder and tie-up preventer, and now the best anti-bleeding paste ever made. To find out how EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Guard can help your equine athletes, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Porchbills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Vick on SiriusXM Radio.
Rolling on the radio, talks about revolution when it's already passed by. Bob Dylan, living that
We're back at the races back at Pimlico. Thanks to Zoe and Richie for swinging through and starting their day. And, of course, they've got an exceedingly full day and a full weekend. And you're looking at First Post today at 11:30, so a little less now than 2 hours away. And Black Eyed Susan goes at 4:48. The Pimlico Special, a little less than an hour before that, 3:43. And we race until 6:30, And not that I don't enjoy a full day of racing, but we'll be sitting down with Tina for dinner at that point at 6:30. To be honest, I can't make any bones. I will spend a couple of minutes with you as we wait for Don to connect with us. Don Johnson going to join us, and I guess I take the opportunity to say thank you to just everybody that was so nice in response to the success yesterday of Carlisle Bell. And the win in the opener yesterday at Belmont, there's a couple of amazing things, really, that occurred. And our friend and one of the DT partners right from the beginning, Don Blaha, Dave Blaha, his dad is Don, his father was a partner as well. But Dave reminded me, you know, under the crush of everything going on at a week like this when we're on the road, May 17th, 2008 was a Preakness Day itself, actually. And it was the Preakness Day for Big Brown. And he was an easy winner, obviously, and won as easily as he had won the Kentucky Derby and the Florida Derby. And, you know, then had the, you know, had the hiccup and the hoof that basically, they were doing everything to hold it together, and it pretty much came undone in the Belmont, but not going to take away from everything else that Big Brown accomplished. That day in Chicago, Chuck Simon sent out our Kicking and Screaming, and it was earlier on the Preakness Day card, and I was actually at my desk and watched as she rallied Kicking and Screaming and won, and that was the first win we had as a stable. And then here we come, shockingly, 10 years to the day. It's almost bizarre, actually. 10 years to the day, and Carlisle Bell, which is the filly that we bred from Moss Sable Chasm, who won at Saratoga for us, and I was pretty moved by what transpired. And I want to thank, of course, Gary Siaka and Paul Barone and the Barn 60 team that does such a great job. And there's so many people involved here. Angel Arroyo gave a great ride to Carlisle Bell and Adina Springs. And yeah, here we are at Pimlico. And Frank Stronach, when Eric Hamelbeck was the manager, and I approached them about breeding to Alphabet Soup, and Mr. Stronach himself approved every breeding and looked at least at every breeding of all the stallions. And he said, breed her to Macho Uno. And so we did. And I want to thank Amy May at Adina and Eric at the time and everybody that made it possible, because we've had really terrible luck when it came to the breeding side. And even if we never breed another one, to get one across like that was a special thrill, and I want to thank everybody that was so kind. And speaking of getting across, what a perfect segue as Don Johnson joins us. And, you know, a lot of you know, some of you don't know Don's name. Others, if you're a gambler of some note, you'll know Don's name. And we think about what he accomplished in a short burst of success, hitting for $15 million in Atlantic City at Caesars and Borgata and at the Tropicana. And Don, though, first and foremost, is around racing. And that came from an early age in the Pacific Northwest. And then even at still a young age, ran Philadelphia Park. And is involved in several different ways in the game. Don Johnson, a real pleasure.
Thank you.
Don, the first, I guess the first order of business, I saw Steve Asmussen earlier this morning, and knowing how tall you are and Steve, you know, there's certain people that you look at and say, oh, yeah, I could. Tim Ritvo. Okay, yeah, he was a jockey. Look at you and Steve Asmussen and Wesley Ward. It's a little harder to envision you in the irons.
That was a long time ago. At 6'1 and 108 pounds, it was a very long time ago.
You know, we've been talking about the scale of weights, actually, as part of the situation with the jocks. And Rich McLeory was just here. Rich was seemingly tall, and Mike McCarthy, a guy that on the tall side, and it's one thing, you know, a certain kind of frame, another thing when you're forcing yourself to maintain weight. Well, you made a transition, Don, that has been, you know, obviously an amazing, fascinating career. And how did you even end up making your way to the East Coast and landing in Philadelphia?
Well, I went to Philadelphia to manage Philadelphia Park. It was recruited by Bob Green and Bill Hogwood.
Sure.
When Greenwood Racing took over Bob Brennan, I think, was owned and ran the track back whatever year that was. And then Bob and Bill came over from London, and I was their first general manager.
And what were you doing ahead of that? I mean, I think you were 30.
Yeah, I was about 30. Early, 30, 31, 32 when I first started managing Philly. Before that, I was a state official. I worked for the governors of Wyoming, worked for the Oregon Racing Commission, was a deputy judge in the state of Idaho, worked for Governor Ann Richards in Texas.
Oh, sure.
As a presiding judge, all in racing.
Well, from there, the gambling portion and the story that is a lot of people wrote about it, and at the time, the Atlantic City struggling, you utilized more negotiation skill even ahead of sitting down to play. Give us the framework, because I think there's a lot of lessons, Don, for horse players about leveling the playing field in the accomplishment of the winning that you amassed.
Well, it wasn't just me. I met some of the right people at the right time. One of the guys he's still around, is and does a lot of the stuff in the horse analytics and handicapping with one of the teams I work with now. He went to Harvard on a Steve Wynn Golden Nugget scholarship. The other guy was a PhD from Stanford, all in mathematics and using mathematics to whether you're mapping a casino floor or you're mapping Wall Street and coming up with an analytical algorithm. You know, you're doing the same thing. We would send a team in ahead of time to look at a casino floor and find out where their strengths and weaknesses are. And then I would go in and negotiate the terms of a deal with them and then go in and play. But the work starts weeks, if not a month, ahead of time. Somebody has to go in and map the floor. And then you go in and start playing. Same thing with handicapping a race.
Yes.
You're creating a roadmap and doing your handicapping, and then you're waiting for the odds board to come up on race day and then try and figure out where there's an inefficiency in the market, you need to go in and take a play.
Explain, when you say the inefficiency, that is one of the things I made a note or two. You know, the difference between the casino style profit and loss versus and the edge, the skim that they take versus the parimutuel marketplace. And everybody, we know that
the casino floor is a bit different in that every game has a built-in house edge. Just like there's a take in horse racing, you have to overcome the house take in order to make a profit in horse racing. Same thing with a casino floor. If the if you can reduce the odds on a blackjack game to 0.25 0.3% house edge, you don't have to do much else other than negotiate a really good deal with them to gain an edge over the casino. One of the biggest edges you get in a casino, look, a table game, we'll just use blackjack as an example because everybody knows the game. A table game has to be dealt by a human being. Human beings make mistakes. Human error alone is enough to overcome their house edge. It doesn't take that much.
You negotiated as part of a, you know, kind of a whale being lured and being invited to play during that run. You negotiated for a hand shuffled deck. Explain why that gave an added to the edge or minimizing their edge.
Well, because they're going to make mistakes. Again, it's a human being that's doing the shuffle. A human being is not as consistent and random as a machine. I don't want to have to play against a machine. It's probably too random to actually beat, although some machines can be beaten as well. The machine's built by human beings that make errors when they're building them, and sometimes it's not as random as you think it is.
Hmm. Well, and that includes the well-known story of you piling up four hands, four eights, splitting four different hands of eights and parlaying it into an $800,000 sequence.
Well, that wasn't too difficult to do when the dealer's showing a six and you've got tens and 11, nine tens and 11s on all of your eights. The eights are naturally going to split against the six. So you split them four times, as many times as they let you. And if each one gets a two or a three on it, you're going to double them. That's a massive edge once you get to that point.
And you didn't flinch during that sequence. What are the lessons, Don? And I'm going to start to fold horse racing and the current conditions in. What are the lessons of your experience on that front for horse players? How can they look at this and glean an approach for themselves to be successful?
It's the same as horse racing. Know the mathematics behind it first, and then map out a plan based on logic and mathematics. Do your handicapping, and then execute into the market when you see an inefficiency relative to the odds line that you come up with.
Most people have
an idea. Look, there are different reasons for being involved in the horse pool. Some people want to be entertained. Sometimes it's fun just to pick a winner, and that's fantastic. That's great. Another way of approaching it is looking at the whole market and then picking horses that are undervalued and taking a position in them. In any given race, a lot of horses have a much, much better chance, as in the Preakness tomorrow. I mean, look, obviously Justified's going to be, and justifiably so, should be the favorite in that race, and he'll probably win the race. But there are other horses in there that could come from further off of the pace than him. He's probably going to sit about second or third to that the horse on the rail that has all the speed. And he's probably going to stalk that horse and take him down in the stretch, or maybe even before that. So you're placing value on what you think he's worth for you to take a position on, and then take a position on a couple of other horses in the race.
Don Johnson,
same
with
as
us.
Casino.
Well, and Don, one thing in here that we have to fold in, and it can be a lesson to players of certain size, the rebate landscape. And you negotiated loss rebates with the casinos, and there's different kinds, even for smaller players, there's rebating available in our marketplace in horse racing. How big a player do you have to be to get a rebate from your ADW or even directly negotiating with the racetracks?
If you're a consistent player at a track, you can sign up for a player reward program. They all have them. and then you factor that into your odds line. You're doing the same thing with your handicap. You handicap, assign a probability to your horse, an odds line to the horses in a race, and then you add in the rebate or your player reward program that you're getting from the track or from your ADW, whoever you're playing with, and you factor that into your betting on the amount that you're going to put down.
The transition or the commitment that you've made, and you referenced the groups that you work with, and Heritage, which you put together as a basically as one of the computer assisted wagering approaches. We've talked about it over the last several years. Maury Wolf and have had this discussion with Paul Matisse, and Tim Ritvo and I talked about it in California before Big Cap. Explain, Don, how much of the market, the overall parimutuel handle, the computer assisted wagering represents from what you can see.
I look at it a bit differently. I'm not exactly sure what the percentage of total volume in the in the U.S. or North American market consists of CAW players, but I think it's somewhere around 15%, 12 to 15%. Not sure of what the exact number is. But you don't have to be a CAW player to incorporate the same standards and principles in handicapping and with a player reward program and playing into the pools. It's really the same for everybody. You just factor that number in, and it's liquidity value that you bring that a CAW player can bring to the pools that makes a difference. Let me say, if they're taking a position and they miss in a race and they're putting in tens of thousands of dollars into a single race, then they're sizing up all the other players that are in the race. So they actually size up the recreational player whose motivation might be different for being in the pool.
Do you know, we've been dealing with the medium and the moderate player, the more casual player, somewhat frustrated by the late odds changes, you know, the money that comes in very late with the batch wagering. What should people understand about that portion? And is there a way for a casual player, you know, to countermand that?
Well, certainly there is. And this, I think it's a bit of a misnomer, and I can't speak for all CAW players because I don't work with all of them, but the ones that I do work with, they don't come in with just a late file. They start taking a position early in a race. So I prefer to say they kind of trickle into the pool. They don't take one big position and come in the last cycle. Too many times you would miss the race completely because you're going to get cut out of the pool. And they're not coming in and just pounding one position. As I said,
right,
they spread out. So they're coming in with more of a balanced portfolio. And when they do miss, they size up the rest of the market. So the recreational player that's in there actually has a chance to take these guys down. And a handicapper that's sitting at the track that has, let's just say, inside information. He's keeping his own notes, whether he's taking workout notes or he has information about horses because he is present at the track. These big CAW players, they can't. They're not going to have that information that a handicapper that specializes in one or two or three tracks. They just don't have the information to apply it to their handicapping. So they're never going to be better than those guys are on a specific product. They're taking a broader swipe at all of the races spread out over the entire spectrum for the entire year. It's different. I liken it more to Wall Street trading.
Very much, and you know, there's obviously been speculation on that front about, you know, what the exchange wagering could do on a broad basis in this country. How much it might draw new blood and new, you know, younger players who would appreciate, you know, the the fast moving nature. The CAW is known for the algorithms that, you know, that are looking to balance, looking for a balanced marketplace. The exacta pools is where we think of it. What is that landscape, Don, in terms of how the algorithms are probing the will pay, not the will pays, but the probables?
Well, they're always combing for inefficiencies in all the markets, but just like the public, they don't have any, they don't have any more insight or information than the public has in looking at those exotic pools. So they have to, they have to make a projection as to what they think those closing prices are going to be. And that projection is often off sometimes. You get overpaid sometimes and underpaid sometimes. I don't think anybody could have projected, let's take the Kentucky Derby race, for instance, that Superfecta. And please, yeah, nobody could have projected that that was going to pay what it did. So you definitely would have under-projected that Superfecta.
Agreed. And on that topic, in terms of finding places where that, you know, the algorithms and this approach may be less effective, what does the algorithm, what does it do for days like today and tomorrow, where we've got surface conditions that are variable?
It's going to have to be factored into the handicapping.
What mechanics are available to do that?
Well, everybody has access to weather conditions off the internet. So
sure.
You would factor in you know, whether there's a headwind, a tailwind, a sidewind, you know, dew point in humidity, temperature. All these things are going to factor into how different horses react to different temperatures. And you have to have collected a database to show how horses perform on different race surfaces. But people, you know, good handicappers have known that for years. That's
sure.
No secret. Some horses like to run in the mud. Some horses like a dry track. Some horses that run well on a dry track won't even run in the mud. They don't like it.
Absolutely. How do you, how do the programs account for, let's say, first time starters, or does it avoid maidens? Does
let me make it real simple. They're just not as accurate.
Okay.
It's difficult to tell.
I love
so
it.
There's probably a good chance that there's going to be a lot of value there for the regular player on these types of days where the track is off.
Are there races and certain divisions or certain kinds of races that you tend to avoid with the
program?
Every
race gets a look. Every race gets handicapped. There are no skips. At least not with the guys that I work with. No skips. Everything gets looked at.
How many cards nationwide on a daily basis?
I'm sorry.
How many cards? How many racetracks, Don? Does the programs
every track? Every track.
Every day.
Amazing. Yeah, every track, every race, every pool type gets a look. I'm not saying you're going to play every track and every race and every pool type, but everything gets a look.
And it's operating in real time.
There's a team of guys that are sitting there watching screens looking for different conditions as well, and that has to be factored into the handicapping. So it's not something that's just on autopilot. It doesn't work that way, or you'd wind up losing a lot of money. You still have to have some kind of human element there watching what's actually going on day to day at each of the tracks. And, of course, the bigger tracks with bigger pools get more eyeballs on them because there's more money at stake.
On that topic, in regards to various marketplaces, Tampa and Oaklawn are known as the circuits that try to limit access to the pools. How accurate is that, or is there a certain percentage that the CAW is involved in different you know, at each different racetrack and each different organization?
Well, that's factored into it. I mean, whether somebody's sitting at the track and handicapping Oaklawn, or they're calling into a home bet, or if they're offered on a website, or they have their own website, not as familiar with Oaklawn and Tampa as some of the other tracks, but it's all factored in. I don't think their market is any less or more efficient than any other market. You know, I have my own personal opinion. I don't want to pick a fight with the guys at Oaklawn. I have to actually like those guys. I think they run a nice race meet down there. But I still think that you're better off with more volume and more traders in your market, just like the stock market, than you are trying to eliminate different types of players.
Like, I had that.
Either it's an open market, or either it's an open market or it's not an open market. If you want a closed market, then you're going to start restricting the type of players that come in. Then I think you're headed down a really rough road.
And I had that. I asked that exact question of Tim Ritvo. You know, saying is there a critical mass where it's bad for the game overall to have this much, you know, or too much of this kind of volume? And he said no. He took that same tack.
Yeah, and I think Tim is absolutely correct. I think he's absolutely correct. That would be like saying in the stock market, you know, they passed this threshold at one point, and that was probably a decade ago, maybe a little bit longer than that, where when they had the high-frequency traders coming in.
Right.
And you know what? Look where the stock market's at today. It certainly helped it. It didn't hurt it. You want more liquidity value in your pools. So the answer, you've already said it, is you need more of them.
Do you find, is there a recruiting mechanism? Are you finding people that are might be new to racing and find this as an avenue of interest to come into the game?
Certainly, I think that you're going to see a lot more people with today's technology. They're coming. You know, they're going to be young, hungry Wall Street types that are very good with analytics. And they're going to be able to apply their analytic skills to handicapping horse racing, and they're coming. You're going to see a lot more of them.
Well,
especially after the Bloomberg article came out with Bill Benter, you're going to see a lot more of them looking at this as one of their portfolios for trading.
Well, and then when you get them out to the track.
I think it's a good thing for racing. We want hungry people in the market.
And then there's also the atmosphere of when you actually come out to the track and enjoy the pleasures of being here.
Absolutely. Well, I think you're going to see a good share of those younger people with money get involved in actually owning horses and going to the tracks live and enjoying it.
Don Johnson's been with us, and I pulled him out of a meeting for this. But Don, one question about the sports betting news this week. How do you view it, and what do you think the intermediate and long-term either benefit or influence will be on the landscape gaming-wise?
Well, you know, I think it's great for horse racing, number one and foremost. As long as racing folds itself into that network, that's going to unveil itself state by state as different states pass legislation to allow it. And you had mentioned exchange wagering. I think it makes exchange wagering, it really is a form of bookmaking. It makes it available in every state now. Every state that wants to have sports wagering can now have exchange wagering or have fixed odds wagering. It'll be a lot more like the UK.
Well, more, as Steve Crist wrote for years, more options and innovative wagering is a way to grow the business. And, Don, I can't thank you enough for the opportunity.
Yeah, 100% agree with Steve on that and have for a long time. But you need more options, more choices.
Well, we wish you the best of luck this weekend, and we're going to check in with you again. I know that this will get a big reception because it's a topic that hasn't been broached, you know, out in the open as much as it should be. And I really appreciate the visit.
Well, hey, I'm headed out to the track right now because I got to go talk to a horse whisperer and get some tips myself so we can incorporate that into the models.
There you go. Don Johnson, best of luck this weekend and going forward.
Thank you. Thank you.
A lot. There's a lot here, and I wanted to take advantage of the opportunity to talk to Don and get this. You know, I think we've done as much as any vehicle to try to shine a light on this area of the wagering marketplace, and it's important, and it's controversial. I'm not going to say the least. Don, very gracious to give us the opportunity to talk, and we're going to do more. And Tim Ritvo also has said that he's quite happy to have these discussions. So I wanted to take advantage of the chance to talk to Don today. We'll take advantage of Jay Pribman, and we can't call it Derby Watch anymore. Now it's Crown Watch as we move from Derby to Preakness and then on to New York. We'll check in with Jay. He was out here earlier. He's back doing some writing, and we'll check in with Jay Pribman next. Nick Tamaro is out at Santa Anita. We'll talk to Nick and handicap a lot of Saturday's action. Also, speaking of other action, I've got to mention while we have a chance and as we go to the break, Arlington tomorrow, the Matron. The mile and in the eighth for Phillies and Mares. They got a group of eight in there. Nice group, actually. Apology Not Accepted, who we talked about at Derby time, but then ended up she ended up scratching. But it seems like Brendan Walsh has got her heading back in the right direction after that good effort in the double dog dare. She's 7-2 in there. Ben Colebrook has got a stretch out candidate. Kalachi Queen, who Christoph Clement had for a couple of North American starts. Wesley Ward. Wesley's everywhere. He's here. He's in Arlington. Conti Pertiro, who was third at Keeneland going back to mid-April in an allowance. Daddy's Boo, Larry Rivelli, as well for Patricia's Hope. You've got we'll talk about the California action with Hammer. Soaring Softly, now a grade three. 7 furlongs, might be the only race on the grass tomorrow in New York. We'll see. They were off the turf yesterday. There's Wesley Ward. He's got Nootka Sound. He's everywhere. And of course, if there's a race named after any of the Phillips horses, that Jimmy Toner wants to win. He's got Coffee Crush in there for Bobby Flay out of the wonderful Wasted Tears. Bart Evans is wonderful mare. And up at Woodbine, the Celine, the good grade three for fillies, three-year-olds. And that looks like a nice enough field, group of eight. Let's take a break here. Jay Pribman, hour two at the races. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
The 144th Kentucky Derby is in the books, and now it's off to Baltimore for the second leg of the Triple Crown. Will Justify dominate again as a short-priced favorite, or will a long shot up in the apple cart? See what the experts have to say in ExpressBet's free Preakness Wager Guide. That's right, the guide is free to everyone and available online at ExpressBet.com. Inside the guide, you'll find expert selections, analysis, and suggested $100 wagering strategies from some of the game's sharpest handicappers, writers, and broadcasters. Don't plunk down your hard-earned bread until you've read what these guys have to say. Also, ExpressBet's free Preakness Wager Guide provides you with important stats and trends you won't find anywhere else. Visit ExpressBet.com to access the free Preakness Wager Guide. And while you're there, open a new ExpressBet account and check out our sensational new account offers, including a $500 welcome bonus. Visit the website for complete details.
Account wagering is not permitted in all states. National Problem Gambling Support Line, 1-800-522-4700.
Hi, John Parada here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.